no, please. We're friends to the end, remember?
This is the end, friend.
Hi, I'm Joe.
And I'm Tiana.
And this is Next Door Villain,
a podcast where we uncover the villains to discover their humanity. Hey, do you need friends? Do you sit at your chair at night and wish that you were out having a Coke, eating a Subway sandwich with someone? Anyone? Are you tired of being lonely? Well, things are about to change, because you can get your very own good girl toy called Tiana. She says things like, let's ditch this stupid popsicle stand when you're out at a party with her. She also says, hi, I'm Tiana. Would you like to play with me and go out to a party? She also says, I'm your friend till you're no longer pretty, get too old, or till you no longer benefit my social standing in some way. She also says, maybe I'll be your friend till the end. We'll see. She'll even blink her eyes and even roll her eyes when you've done something kind of annoying, like laugh too loudly in the middle of Buffalo Wild Wings. She'll even be annoying and randomly say, hidey ho ho, hee 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 hee, at random moments, like when you are trying to have a serious conversation with her about your fears, like your fear of death. So head to the store nearest to you to get your good girl Tiana toy today. Batteries and true riddance of loneliness not included. The end.
Wow, how much does good girl Tiana cost?
Oh yeah, I forgot that. That important piece of information. $4.99.
$499?
Quite a bargain. No, just $4.99.
Wow, that's a steal, especially if it's going to cure my loneliness.
Curing it is not guaranteed, but she will try.
Yeah, and Good Girl Tiana doll is an offshoot, maybe, of another famous doll who, coincidentally, we're talking about today on the podcast, the Good Boy doll.
Good guy.
Good guy. Good guy doll. More famously known as Chucky, from the 1988 film
Chucky.
Child's Play, and the subsequent 7 sequels. There was also a TV series and a 2019 remake, which is sort of a different story altogether. We today, though, are going to focus on the 1988 film Child's Play specifically. Tiana, did you see this film before we decided to do this episode?
No, I didn't. I was not expecting it to be totally like that. I wasn't expecting a man to very randomly enter his soul into a doll.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that was very intense.
Yes. I want to say we're doing this episode because it is a villain that our patrons voted on. So if you want to help make decisions on who we cover in future episodes, you can follow us on Patreon. There are a number of different levels. For as little as $3 a month, you can help vote on the villains that we cover in the future. And this month we arrived at Chucky from Child's Play, a film which neither of us had seen, and now we both have. And personally, I loved it.
Why did you love it?
It was a simple, well-done horror slasher film. Like, there were no frills and whistle. Like, it wasn't trying to be something that it wasn't. It was just a straight up, like, here's a monster. It's tearing people up. I don't know. I just thought it was, and it was short. I hate when movies go really long. It felt like it was everything that it needed and nothing more.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, it's an older movie. A lot of people may not have seen it. Or I mean, I think a lot of people have probably know Chucky, the Chucky doll. But I don't know if a lot of people have necessarily actually seen the movie through and through. So I want to give a brief rundown of the plot. So essentially, the movie starts out with this really intense action sequence. Like, I started the film. I don't know if you had this experience, Tian, but I was like, did I accidentally fast forward to the middle of a movie? I was like, going on? This serial killer murderer dude, Charles Lee Ray, is being chased by a cop. And basically, he like runs into this toy store. He gets shot. And as he's dying out, he's like laying next to this doll. And he starts like saying this incantation. Is that a word? Did I make that up?
This chant.
Yeah, he starts chanting something. I think in French. It was not English.
It was, yeah, definitely not English. Haitian Creole.
All of a sudden, this giant lightning bolt comes down. The place like blows up.
Typical.
And we don't really know what happened. But we do because we know about the Chucky doll. So
yeah.
Fast forward to this apartment where this adorable little kid is like watching TV, and we hear about this good boy doll, which is the same doll that we saw the guy do the chant with earlier.
The Lakeshore Strangler, which, by the way, sounds like a hotel. Lakeshore. Like he
it does.
Was like,
yeah.
It sounds like a gated community, like the Lakeshore Homes. I'm going to be the Lakeshore Strangler. I don't know.
Yeah, and his name actually, this just reminded me of Charles Lee Ray, is sort of a combination of some real life serial killers. So it's Charles Manson, Lee Harvey Oswald, who I guess is not a serial killer. And the last one was James Earl Ray, who assassinated Martin Luther King Jr. So I guess they're not all serial killers, but they are all bad people for sure. Anyways, so this cute little boy, we find out it's his birthday, and his single mother couldn't afford to get him the good boy doll that he really wanted, and instead gave him clothes, which is the
it's good guy,
gift.
Not good boy.
Good, oh, good guy, good guy, really?
Yeah.
isn't it weirder for a child to have a doll friend that's a guy? I just feel like I want my child to have. A guy sounds like it's like an adult friend. that's like, I love it when you hug me. This all sounds weirder the more
I love you,
we're
good guy. But what is weirder? I love you, good guy. Thanks for hanging out with me. Or I love you, good boy.
If it's a boy, then that's totally normal, right?
How about both sound weird? Yeah.
All right. So his mom acquires this good guy doll from some dude in a back alley, and we find out pretty quickly that the serial killer is now inside the doll, and he just starts murdering people, and he's coming after everybody. He's coming after his partner Eddie, who abandoned him, and this other dude who taught him how to possess objects, and the cop that shot him. And then he finds out that the only way he can get back into a human body is he can repossess the person who discovered him first, which was the 6-year-old boy. So he has to go back and find the boy so he can like repossess the boy and then come back into the world as a 6-year-old child.
I have a question. Yes. If you caught on to this, does he have to enter into a human body in order to continue living? Or did he just want to enter into a human body so that he's not a toy for eternity?
That's a great question. And I had the same question. I don't feel like they really answered it, because when he goes to the guy who like taught him how to possess things and he asks that question, we find out that he like the longer he stays in this doll, the more human he becomes. And so, like, the more likely he can be to be killed. So in my mind, I was like, wait, he's slowly becoming more human anyways. Why does he need to go back and repossess this young boy? So I was also confused by that.
Yeah. I guess becoming a human, you become more powerful anyway. When you're a little toy, you're like a little twerp thing.
Yeah, maybe when he possesses the 6-year-old boy, he then at least gets to grow up. Maybe.
Right.
Rather than being stuck in a toy size body, I guess.
Yeah. Oh, God. Could you imagine if he actually was successful in possessing that little boy? He would have, like, gone to school and, like, killed the teacher.
This is a prolific murderer who has killed 22 yes. people already. So,
oh Lord,
I can only imagine what he might do with a second chance at life. But we are here today to empathize with him. It's what we do on this podcast.
No, and no.
I don't know about you, Tiana, but I think this was the most difficult villain we've covered for me to empathize with.
Yeah.
And only because I just didn't feel like I had a good route in. We don't know much mm-hmm. about him except that he's this serial killer who's killed a bunch of people, and now he's a doll killing more people. We don't really get a backstory. And, you know, we are focusing primarily on the movie Child's Play, but from the reading I've done, even in the other films, we don't get a whole lot of a backstory. I did find a little bit of information on the Child's Play wiki that says that in the Child's Play 2 novel, which I didn't know existed.
Oh.
His mother was an alcoholic who was abusive to him, and his father left before he was born, and he was not a good student in school, and so he was put in special needs classes, and he was abused for much of his life and ended up basically strangling his mother to death, which sort of started his career as a strangler. So to some degree, it's
he's strangled.
It's kind of the same story, right, that we hear over and over again, and it's frustrating that just like yet again, probably had this child had a good support system and people who cared about him and took care of him and provided him a decent or at least a love-filled life, he may well not have become a serial killer. We don't know that for sure, but there's just an abundance of evidence out there in the world that people who have good support systems and people who care about them are less likely to do bad things. That's like my mantra, I guess, that I have to say every episode.
If only he had a good support system, then he would not have turned into a doll that bites necks. We learned our lesson. Treat people well or else they'll turn into a doll that bites your neck.
Yes, that is the moral of this movie.
Well, okay, so how did I empathize with him? So, you know, I feel for him a little bit in that, you know, it sucks to almost die, sucks to become a doll, sucks to be an ugly doll. I feel for him there. That's kind of about it. Like, he's really ugly. I mean, imagine if you are a doll. I mean, just sitting in the corner of bedrooms. But anyhow, all right, so I kind of relate to his relentless desire to want to stay alive and to live. He wanted to stay alive so badly that he was willing to become a doll. And you know what? I would transfer my body to a doll if that was the only way at the time for me to stay alive. I mean, imagine if that was like an option, right? Imagine I'm in the hospital room while I'm dying from like a wound or something. And they're like, oh, doc, she's not staying with us. And the doctor's like, it's okay, get out the Barbie doll. She can transfer to Airplane Barbie or something. Yeah, like we all, right, have a desire to maintain existence and to live, including myself, including Chucky. So Chucky's really relatable. I know this is a stretch. So the German philosopher Schopenhauer once said, what occupies all living things and keeps them in movement is striving for existence. With existence, however, when it is assured to them, they have no idea what to do. Therefore, the second thing that sets them into movement is striving to be rid of the burden of existence, to render oneself insensible to it, to quote-unquote kill time, to escape boredom. So basically, first we want to strive to live and exist by like getting enough food, sleeping well, making sure we have money to get food, et cetera, et cetera. Once we have that, then we like keep striving for things. Like that's like human nature. Chucky is striving to live and to exist by first getting into the Chucky doll. And then once he can continue living as the Chucky doll,
he can go back to his passion.
Yes, he can go back to his passion by killing people. That's his effed up goal in life. Then later, and then he's like, I want to be more alive. So he wants to go back and get into Andy's body in order to maintain his existence further. So he's striving to live and to also kill time with goals and to literally kill humans. Kill time and kill humans, you know. So yeah, Chucky is kind of relatable in that he is relentlessly trying to live and stay busy, like what I'm trying to do, just not in the same way as Chucky, obviously. I first do my best to stay alive, you know, eat, sleep, drink water. And then I find things in life to strive for, like a promotion or something. All of us, you, me, Chucky, we're all striving for existence and the completion of goals. So relatable.
Do you think you can find a fourth way to re-explain that?
Maybe. Just want to make sure everyone understands my point, which is very important.
Yes. Well, again, I had a really tough time empathizing with Chucky, but the one thing I sort of latched onto was this moment in the beginning of the film when he's running away from the cop and his partner in crime, Eddie, the getaway driver, just abandons him. He's just like,
yeah,
peace out, I'm going. And he's like, Eddie, what's up? Where are you going? And I know that was just like a singular moment, but I felt like really sad for him in that moment, because it is like really hard when you have someone who you think is by your side and someone that's your friend or your confidant. And then all of a sudden in the most important moment, they just bail on you. And that is very difficult and frustrating. And it sort of makes it more difficult to trust and, you know, generate relationships with people in the future. And this is already a guy who clearly doesn't have a lot of great relationships. And so the one dude who is willing to be his accomplice in strangling people, which you got to think there's not a lot of people who are willing to help you out with that skill. That guy abandons him in his biggest moment of need.
The piece of shit abandons the piece of shit. Sad.
And they're both worse off for it.
Because one died and one's it all. So don't abandon your friends, because one of you will die and one of you will be a doll.
Well, yeah, one of you will come back as a doll and murder the other one.
So don't do that.
Yeah.
There's a lot of lessons in this film, guys. Please. Please know.
Yeah, I mean, that particular point is very salient to me, because it's something, in a way, I've been sort of discussing this with my partner a little bit recently, because I do feel like some of the things that I'm dealing with from growing up is like feeling maybe forgotten or like unwanted by, you know, the fact that I have a twin and feeling like always like lumped together. And
if it makes you feel better, I always forget that you're a twin.
Thank you. As I'm talking about my sort of like long-term trauma of not being recognized because there was always someone else around. Anyway, so yeah, we've been talking a lot about this sort of thing and having that trust to like have someone who's always there, always your safe space, and someone who's always going to come back to you and see you and recognize you is just an important thing to have in your life. And Charles, Chucky, seems like he didn't have that. He didn't have someone he could trust at his darkest moment. That's sad.
Yeah, it is sad. It is, and now he's a doll.
Yep.
So, okay, so I do have a question. So Charles, in the beginning, Charles Lee Ray, when he was dying, he had his doubts on whether saying the spell would successfully allow him to transfer his soul to the Chucky doll. But he had to believe in the possibility of it working when he was dying. When was a time you suddenly and spontaneously believed in something really, really weird?
It's a good question. I mean, I think what you're getting at really is that a lot of times you don't know necessarily what you believe in until that moment of extreme stress or that moment that you react. I think of like,
right.
I think there's a quotation or something about this, about how the evidence that you like that people believe in ghosts is that you're scared of them.
Oh, yeah.
Right. You can say you don't believe in them, but in the moment when you're like in a dark room and something like creepy like floats by in your vision and you're like freaked out, that fear is sort of evidence. It's like we have these innate beliefs inside of us, and like we can pretend like we don't necessarily believe in them, but in those intense, stressful moments or where we don't have time to really think and process, we find out the things that we believe inherently deep down. Do I have a good example? Am I stalling for time as I try to think up an example? It's possible. Yeah.
Yeah.
I do have an example, but it is sort of intensely personal. I'm going to spit this out because whatever. I had a very intensely emotional experience the other day. So I've sort of been struggling with having bottled up emotions that I don't let out very easily. And the other day I was having this like really emotional experience where I was like trying to let it out, and just trying to have like a good cry, and maybe I was enhancing that moment with substances that helped accomplish that, mushrooms in this case, to really unlock those emotions. And one thing I never like realized that I like fully understood and is the way that your body holds on to like emotions and trauma and stuff. And I really felt like in order to release it, when I really let go, like I really had to like hit the bed and like shake, and that there was all this stuff stored within my body. And prior to that, like I've heard that before, like in therapy conversations about it, but I don't think I really knew that I believed it until that moment when I was like letting it out, and all of a sudden it like really felt good just to like release that from my body. And I felt like I was like unwinding by throwing a tantrum on the bed and kicking my legs. And so in that moment I was like, oh yeah, this is like legit and real. And I didn't know that this was, but I did suddenly believe in that. And it felt good, and it helped me release all those bottled up emotions.
So you believed in the need to just release it, and yeah, the importance, yeah, of that, basically. Yeah.
And that the way to do that was like, you know, flailing around embarrassingly while I'm crying.
Yeah. Well, thanks for sharing that. I have had really crappy mental health these past few weeks, actually. And so maybe I'll apply that. Who knows? But I mean, it's getting better. And speaking of mental health, I'll do a mental health example too. So the first example is just, I've needed to believe that meditation will help me a lot, but for a long time I've just kind of felt that it was a little bit bogus, like, oh, you don't think of anything, or you just sit there, oh yeah, like that accomplishes a lot, you know. But I'm being more open and meditating more, and it is helping. I think I need to do it a little bit more in order to like have a precise conclusion on what I think, but I have to believe in it because there's not many other options for me like right now as to what to do about all the crazy thoughts and emotions and inability to focus. Like there's not a whole lot of other stuff that I can do, right? Except meditate in order to practice mindfulness and being present in the moment, and to practice being more grateful, because I really need to work on that. And I think it's helping.
Yeah, it's tough. I'm kind of in the same boat.
Yeah.
About meditation, yeah, as you are. I believe logically, right, that it should be, yeah, helpful and work, but I have a hard time, yeah, convincing myself, because like in the moment to moment, it doesn't feel like a lot has happened.
Right. But some meditation sessions, I just feel some heavy weight is lifted.
Mm.
And it's just like a reminder. It's like a buddy, a little friend, a little good guy saying, nice, hey,
bring it back around.
Yeah. Remember to be grateful today. Remember that the sun is shining and the birds are out, and that you're on a big rock in the middle of a galaxy that's next to other galaxies. And
you're not trapped in the body of a doll.
Be grateful. You're not Chucky. You're not an airplane Barbie staring at people. in the corner of a garbage
bin. There's a metaphor there for sure about like being trapped in a body that can only move in certain ways, releasing yourself from the stiffness of societal pressure and anxiety and being able to move freely in your own body, not the one that the prison that's created around you in the form of a doll.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you just make that up on the spot?
Yes, that I did. Metaphor. So
very nice. Very nice.
Thank you.
I also have a ghost example, and I kind of want to say it because you brought up ghosts earlier, but
yeah, go for it.
I didn't have to believe in the ghost, but one time when we were in college, I heard one story that there was a ghost that was in black that was sitting on someone's bed in their dorm on like the top floor of one of the dorm buildings that is known for being haunted. I don't know why. Usually on the weekend, right? I'm usually at like a speech tournament or I'm with my friends. But for some reason on that Friday night, I just decided I want to believe in this. I want something to believe in. So I am going to sit on the floor, on the top floor of this dormitory hall, and just sit there for hours and see if anything happens. Like, what was I doing? Didn't I have places to be, things to do?
Did anything happen?
I guess not. No. But I did interview a few of the residents, and one of them, she was like, yeah, I can sense these things better than other people, like ghosts. And she's like, it's not surprising at all to me that there have been ghost sightings here. But she didn't have any personal ghost sightings, but she felt that it was very possible in that space.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is all fine and good, but I do have a proclivity for being very scared, and I do live alone in a house, and it is dark out.
Oh, yeah. it's nighttime there.
Yes.
I forgot. Well, if it helps, makes you feel better, here in China, it is bright and sunny, and the birds are singing, so just...
Well, here in Maine, it is dark and a little bit foggy.
Oh, and it's almost Halloween.
Yeah, it's pretty creepy in Maine at night sometimes, I'll say. It's very dark here, darker than any place I've ever lived for some reason. I don't think they have as many streetlights, which is great for stargazing, but sometimes bad if you're scared of the dark like me. Mm-hmm. So maybe, Tiana, you can lighten the mood with a poem.
Yes. I don't think this poem is going to lighten the mood, but it will make people feel strange. So
okay. Well, that's probably something.
All right. So this poem is called A BFF Bumble Friendship Meetup with Chucky. I matched with a guy named Chucky on BFF Bumble. Online friendship app, you know. Said he was a good guy in his bio. I like that. I like good guys. Also, and I appreciate how open he was about this, he said he was here to hang with those of us who spend nights looking at ceilings to nowhere. He's here to help people like me who don't have anyone to text when funny things happen at work. I wondered where Michaela was, but I didn't know. I didn't want to bother her. So I thought I'd hang with a guy who really wants to be a friend. Let him cure my loneliness by injecting a cold one with the boys. So I meet him at Dave's Bar on Fifth Avenue in Charleston, dive bar with neon purple elegance over bar hoppers scrubbing. Chucky was sitting in the middle of the bar sipping a whiskey sour with a cherry on top. He was shorter than he said in his profile bio. He grins at me, and chunks of blood smoothly drip through his gums like it's an ice cream machine churning out a cherry blizzard. One look at him, I'm so scared, I feel like I smelled dinosaur breath. So terrifying, looking at his eyes make me feel like I'm looking at my dad's chest hair. I'm shaken in my boots so hard, I feel like I'm seeing the carcass of a raccoon I befriended and didn't want to see dead. I decide to sit down. He says to me, "You're late, fucking asshole." I say, "Okay." I don't usually hang out with guys who hang out with children. It's weird, but here we are. Thanks for meeting me here, I say. No problem, man, quips Chucky. Bar manager comes out and says to Chucky, excuse me, baby sir. We need to see your ID. My bar hop shouldn't have served you. You look like you're younger than 40. Chucky says, you look like your meatloaf. And this is where the biting starts. Chucky flies onto the manager like a ninja blade, takes a bite out of his neck with the same vigor as a ravished music man who finally gets to sing. He chomps, bites, chews, and swallows the manager's neck skin. Chucky says his neck tastes like cooked human that took care of himself in life. That's great. He says the Blood River blanket coming out of the manager's neck keeps the manager warm in his last moments. And the manager was Street Fightered out of life, and the KO was done with sharp teeth by a flying baby toy that would crush knees until you bowed and had flowers blooming out of your corpse. The manager's blank eyes stare at the neon lights in the bar, and everyone stares back in a moment of silence. And this is where Chucky chuckles, wipes his mouth, and says, too bad you can't achieve your dreams, man, 'cause you're dead. He turns to me. Let's get to the dance floor. Swedish House Mafia in the middle of this dive bar. Let's go. Remnants of the manager's neck skin are still falling out of Chucky's mouth while he's dancing like he's a mother robin feeding her young in the nest. He nourishes this place with freaky, horrendous shock. We're dancing like there is a tomorrow, 'cause thank God I'm not the manager who lost a piece of himself. This calls for a celebratory dance, 'cause I ain't dead yet. And I pick up Chucky and I swing him around the dance floor. I'm swinging an ugly, short-talking, murderous toy on the dance floor in this bar, and I see his eyes that have nothing in them except for the heebie-jeebies and a memory of people falling from buildings like rain. We leave the bar and get grub. Chucky gives a stray dog some of his KFC. Did you have fun? He asks. I answered no. He asks, but were you lonely tonight? I answer, I guess not. The end.
Wow, that was all from your head.
Yeah, it was. Are you concerned? Yeah, about what's inside my brain.
I think you really might need to start doing more meditating.
Well, in my defense, I really went strange because it's a horror movie, right? So I want to write a horror poem. Something real freaky deaky.
So, well, you achieved your goals. That is something to be proud
yes!
of.
Yes. Yes. What I strived for was accomplished.
Well, that's it for Chucky. We did our very best, and we barely empathized with him, but we did talk for a period of time, so.
We did our job as best as we could.
And if you would like to contribute to coming up with villains for us to talk about, or attempt to talk about, again, you can support us on Patreon at patreon.com/nextdoorvillain. We're also on all the social medias, well, some of them, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, TikTok, I think, at nextdoorvillain. And you can email us at nextdoorvillain@gmail.com. We love to hear from you and all that good stuff.
Yeah. Rate, review, share. Don't bite people. Don't become a doll. Peace.